Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th, with 6 race events including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Millions of Americans struggle to fall asleep or stay asleep. This hour's all about getting better sleep and unraveling the mystery of sleep. Joining us to do that, neurologist Dr. Eric Daikin. Dr. Daikin is the director of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorder Center. Welcome to our program again.
Thanks, Ben.
It's been a while since we've had you on, and we're glad to have you back. Also with you, Dr. Rachel Immon of the University of Iowa, finishing up a sleep fellowship. Dr. Immon is a psychiatrist and a family physician. Welcome to you.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
I want to reach out to our listeners to have you share your sleep problem this hour. Dr. Daikin and Dr. Immon will be with us the entire hour. It's a great chance for you to share your sleep problem or perhaps an unusual sleep experience. You can get advice from our two doctors. Perhaps you've changed something in your life that's led to better sleep, and others can learn from that. Join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. A little bit later in the program, we'll be catching up on some of our recent research in sleep to have our doctors comment on that as well. Dr. Immon, let me start with you because you've done some work. You've chosen to focus on insomnia and specifically a certain treatment for insomnia, cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia. First of all, let's define insomnia a little bit better. Chronic insomnia is defined as?
That's a really good question because knowing what insomnia is really helps us determine how to approach it. So insomnia can be different aspects of poor sleep. Primarily, it's trouble falling asleep or staying asleep. And because of one or both of those things, you're not able to get adequate total sleep.
Mm-hmm. And we would distinguish that from, let's say there is a death in the family, some stress in a marriage. We would expect that over a period of weeks, maybe months, that would cause disturbed sleep patterns. That's different from chronic sleep insomnia?
Yes, absolutely. It's a natural response to have increased stress or anxiety around different negative or positive life events. But when this persists without clear reason for weeks and months, it turns into a problem of its own. And that's when we start to think of it as a different disorder called insomnia.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so let's talk specifically about this treatment, cognitive behavioral therapy. It goes by the acronym CBTI. For insomnia. It's deemed to be a safe and effective method for treating it. And the nice thing about this, it's without drugs. So many of our sleep mm-hmm. problems are given a prescription. So how do you determine whether someone is a good candidate for cognitive behavioral therapy?
So there are a couple of key things that make someone a good candidate. One is knowing that they have insomnia, as we talked about. Another is if it's a person who's really motivated to address insomnia with a behavioral program as compared to a medication. So an individual who is really motivated can be a great candidate. And then we also want to make sure that there are not other problems that were going on that would preclude them from being in treatment, such as an untreated sleep disorder, say sleep apnea. You know, you're really fighting yourself if you have an untreated medical sleep disorder. It's hard to work on CBTI if something's interrupting your sleep for a medical reason.
Mm-hmm. So we want to rule out, and Dr. Daikin, quickly, sleep apnea is a physiological, something wrong with our body. It's not something that we're trying to recondition in our mind. It's something that we have to take physical care of, right?
Yeah, I have apnea. 30 million Americans probably underdiagnosed. Airway gets floppy. When you go to sleep and you don't get any air, Carrie Fisher, John Candy, Andre the Giant, Jerry Garcia, Reggie White, real common thing. My cousin. So got to take care of that. But sometimes you don't know that that's there. And as such, it's always good to see a good healthcare professional, a good APP, a lot of ARNPs, a lot of PAs, a lot of physicians, MDs, mm-hmm. DOs, someone who can look at the whole picture. Then if that's clear, CBTI.
Okay. CBTI, cognitive behavioral therapy, then how would you proceed once you rule in a good candidate?
So that's a Great question. And there are some general ideas of how we proceed and also some things that are specific to the individual. I like to compare CBTI to physical therapy. You're working on a specific problem with exercises that help you improve the function of yourself. And CBTI is very similar in that you are going to be working on exercises to improve your brain function and your sleep ability, but it is quite individualized depending on what the aspect of trouble is. Mm-hmm. Say if it's getting total sleep time, falling asleep, or staying asleep, we'll approach it a little differently.
So can you give me an example of a common problem that can be solved, a specific set of circumstances, somebody's sleep routine or the way they think about sleep that you can address with a CBT?
Absolutely. A common thing we see is that people's daytime life is influencing their nighttime schedule. So, for example, a young parent who has children who finds that the only time they can get anything done around the house is after children have gone to bed. So they might be postponing their sleep time quite a bit. And then maybe their children don't sleep well through the night or wake them up early, and they start shifting their sleep hours towards the day. So then they no longer have a nice consolidated period of sleep. They have poor sleep at night and turn to napping during the day. So we might look at that and see if we can structure their day to achieve what they need and then create a good, healthy sleep schedule. So a planned time to go to bed and a planned time to wake up.
Mm-hmm. How effective is this? How sure can you be that you will help the people in question? Yeah.
That is a question a lot of people ask. And because CBTA has been around since the 1980s, we've had a lot of time to do research on this question. And overall, when you look at all comers to the program, CBTI improves the sleep of about 75 to 80% of the people who do the program. Mm-hmm. So I'm usually fairly confident we can work through the issues.
Right. It is different, though, don't you have to say, Dr. Immon, it is different than taking a pill. It requires some work, and that's why you're looking for people who are highly motivated, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's one of the things why motivation makes someone a great candidate, and I like to think about it as I think about physical therapy for the body. It will take work and time, but it typically results in a great outcome.
Right, and it won't typically have a desired outcome tomorrow or even next week. You've got to reprogram yourself a little bit.
Absolutely. I ask people to think about it as a 6-week commitment. If we can really work hard together for 6 weeks, they'll see quite a bit of improvement. And the nice thing about it, like physical therapy, this program will continue to show benefits for months and years after that.
Okay. If you'd like to join our conversation with Dr. Rachel Immon and Dr. Eric Dykin, 1-866-780-9100. This hour is all about sleep, getting better sleep, and trying to get rid of whatever sleep problem you may have. Jessica's joining us in Dubuque. Welcome to the program, Jessica. Talking about sleep research, getting better sleep. How is this touching your life at the present time? Welcome.
Hi. Thank you. Thanks for taking my call. Right now, it's been hard. We suffered a tragic event. Our daughter suddenly passed away in 2015.
I'm so
sorry.
And
We've gotten together with other support groups and parents that have suffered the same. And all of us we struggle with trying to sleep at night. And of course, we don't want to turn to anything addicting or harmful. But I was wondering if you guys have any tips that maybe we could use or how we could try to overcome that.
Dr. Dykin, trauma during life leads to poor sleep, and understandably so in this case, in Jessica's case, she and her family. What would you say to her?
Well, there are normal stresses and pressures. And as you said, acutely, for a brief period of time, you know, you get over a minimal stress, it's overexcited, overhappy, the first few days at Disney. But when you lose a child, there's nothing, in my opinion, nothing worse. I could have cancer, but if I lost my child, so we've been in some of the support groups, and I do have a good psychiatrist with me right now, and sometimes we need that because that's just not something you get over. It's there forever and ever. sometimes if I'm a little anxious, melatonin is holistic. It's over the counter. It's very inconsistent in regard to its potency. But do you ever need a drug? Usually you don't really need a drug. But if you are really suffering, if there's a concomitant depression, which is very possible, then I would go to an expert. But sometimes that kind of depression, a back rub, melatonin, hot toddy at night is not going to do it. What do you think, Dr. Immon?
I think you make really great points, and I agree. It's heartbreaking to lose a child. And this question really gets to the two aspects of CBTI, so the cognitive portion of it. And with someone who's lost a child and in that group that you're in, Jessica, I would say this is a really good one-on-one conversation to have with a trained professional and talk about where those thoughts are leading you. Is the person thinking about their child and it causes anxiety or stressful thoughts? Is that the only time they really allow themselves to think about the child when all the other noises of the day have faded away? And then try to restructure some of those thoughts into a way that is less distressing, allowing yourself to grieve during times where you can during the day, or setting aside time for that, and trying to look at the cognitive side of that, restructure those stressors into a way that doesn't disrupt sleep. But I agree, that's a horrible loss, and it would be a very difficult thing to cope with.
Jessica, thank you for your call, sharing from Dubuque. We wish you and your family the best in getting through this very difficult time. Thank you, Jessica.
You know, I'd add, isn't it wonderful, though, double-edged sword, that you have something that you could care that much about, to suffer that much about? Those that don't have anything to lose, but what a thing to lose. Our best with you.
1-866-780-9100, talking about sleep, all the things that bother our sleep. And there are many, many, all kinds of things that bother our sleep, prevent us from getting a good night's sleep. Joining us this hour, Dr. Eric Daikin and Dr. Rachel Immon. I wanted to ask you a little bit about a New York Times article before we go back to our next caller, because we live in this high-tech time with an app for everything. We have wearable watches and bands. This is reading a little bit from a New York Times article, which is asking, are you sabotaging your sleep in your quest to improve it? Reading from the article, many new tools are becoming available to monitor your sleep or help you achieve better sleep. Wearable watches, bands, nearable devices that you can place on your bed or nightstand, and apps that work by monitoring biometric data, noise, and movement. They can remind you to start winding down or generate a report on your night's slumber. But some sleep specialists caution that these apps and devices may provide inaccurate data and can even exacerbate symptoms of insomnia. So what are your thoughts on, you deal with patients day in and day out for these years in our digital age. What is your experience? What guidance do you offer people who turn to apps and these nearable devices in hopes of improving their sleep, Dr. Daikin?
We'll wind up with see if we can get some diagnoses from Dr. Immon. But, I mean, do you have any overuse injuries? You ever see somebody who does too much of a good thing? You know, if one aspirin's good, 18 must be really good. Or if you're going to prepare for the marathon, let's do 40 miles a day every day. So most of my body parts are in the refrigerator. I tell you, I've broken everything and overdoing it, over the top, overachievers. And everyone's heard of that. Don't be a clock watcher. Oh, no, I still got the clock right there by my bed, and I look at it, oh, just another hour of sleep. And I think you can overdo a good thing. So you're all hooked up. The wires are all there. And then there is a cognitive element to good health care in regard to insomnia. And you've got to know what's normal. And sometimes we don't know what's normal. And that's part of cognitive behavioral therapeutic intervention, being taught what's normal. And some of this is technology is great, but some can be actually over the top and actually too much for many of us. So what do you think, Dr. Immon?
I absolutely agree. I think that one of the things that we look for in CBTI is if someone's trying to sleep. It sounds silly, but the worst thing you can do for your sleep is to try to sleep. Sleep should come naturally. You don't need to think about it. You don't need to wake up the next day and get an external report on your sleep. You should have an estimate of it just naturally. Do you feel rested? Was there any trouble? It would be similar to having a device that tells you how many times you breathe a minute. You don't need that. You don't need to count your breaths and then tell yourself, I need to breathe slower or faster. Sleep should be natural. Breathing should be natural. We don't need a device to tell us if it was good or bad.
Mm-hmm. You should just go with, how do you feel in the morning? Do you feel
absolutely
rested?
Don't overthink it.
Do you not have a headache, for instance? If you have a headache in the morning, that might be an indication that your sleep is poor. Okay. Let's go back to our phones, 1-866-780-9100, dealing with getting better sleep. Dr. Eric Dykin, Dr. Rachel Immon with us this hour. Brooke is with us in Iowa City. Hi, Brooke.
Hi.
Welcome to the program. Have you got a sleeping problem?
Well, I do, kind of. It's not necessarily a personal problem, but my partner, whom I share a bed with, is kind of a poor sleeper, and he also wakes up earlier than I do. So as a result, my sleep has been dramatically negatively impacted. And I just wondered, like, how common is this for couples who sleep together? And if you have any recommendations for kind of how to work with it.
Yeah, it's real common. I know of one couple in particular, but my wife will get angry if I bring up too much personal stuff. But, you know, it's interesting. You probably remember as a kid, older parents of some of your friends, oh, my parents don't even sleep in the same room anymore. Why? Well, they're older, you know. And it's usually because one snores like a banshee and has apnea and you want to treat it. Or they may actually, and I've seen that, people on different schedules. We see this right now in China. It's a major problem. We have two working parents. So we have a lot of colleagues and family friends, actually. My wife's family's from Shanghai. The kids stay up until both parents get home from work. And they're up till it's late. And as Dr. Immon said, and mom and dad don't get any work done until late when the kids are asleep. And where do you sleep? So you can have a night shift worker as a spouse, and you're a day shift worker, it can come up multiple. So what do you do with that, Dr. Immon?
So I think this is a great point. I would say the majority of referrals that we get to sleep clinic are from partners. I think they are the primary reason a lot of people come in, whether it be snoring or restless sleep or disrupted sleep. And I think when you're in the position of not having this sleep problem yourself, but being next to someone that does, empathy and encouragement can go a long way. So providing information in a, I guess, respectful and soft way can be very helpful. And truly, the partner has probably the most power to help someone to say, hey, you know, you might not notice this because you're asleep, but I notice this and it makes me worry about your health, or it makes me wonder if there's something that you could have a better day if you get better sleep.
Right. And imagine the untold number of stories that you've experienced where it is the partner that has referred the problem sleeper to you. And once that problem, if it's sleep apnea, has been fixed, that person is eternally grateful to the person who did refer
them,
right?
Yeah.
Because the problem would not have been discovered otherwise.
And environmental insomnia.
Yes.
Brooke in Iowa City, I hope that helped. Brooke, are you still
there?
Thank you. Thank you very much, Brooke in Iowa City. Let's go quickly before the break to Kate in Cedar Falls. Kate dialed 1-866-780-9100 as we talk about getting better sleep with our sleep doctors this hour. Kate, welcome to the program. We're coming up on a break, but you had a problem to discuss.
I'll make it quick.
Yeah, sure.
I just wanted to pass along something that's helping me. I began clenching my teeth and was tired and had bouts of brain fog during the day. It was determined that I had mild sleep apnea. And in my research, I found that many people can use special bite plates that help your jaw thrust forward. It opens your airway. So I'm in the early stages of using it, but already I feel better. And the great thing about it is that it's portable. You know, I'm traveling and that I don't have a CPAP machine that I have to haul and mm-hmm. all of that stuff. So if that's helpful for anyone, visit your dentist and they can make one for you.
Right. I think these are certain dentists who are specialized in this area, Dr. Dyken.
Yes, you have.
Yeah.
Yeah, and in fact, we work with the College of Dentistry, and we do hundreds of these per year. And as you indicate, they're often even better tolerated than CPAP across the board if you're a candidate. And usually it's mild to moderate obstructive apnea, and you have the oral and the jaw and the teeth that fit the standard where if you open the jaw forward. We call it anterior airway space. You open the airway. And it's a beautiful therapy if you're a candidate for it. And we do hundreds per year with the College of Dentistry here. So, well, good for you. Yeah, mm-hmm. do well with that.
Thanks, Kate, for your call from Cedar Falls. Let's talk a little bit more in depth about snoring. Is snoring always an indicator that there's a sleep problem, Dr. Emmon?
Not always, although it often warrants the evaluation. So sometimes people think it's a bit funny when they hear a child snoring. They say, oh, he snores like an old sailor. And I think it's cute for a few minutes, and then we got to start to ask, wait, why is this child snoring? Mm-hmm. And it won't always be a problem, but it oftentimes is. Same with adults. You know, sometimes snoring is simply snoring, but oftentimes it's a sign that there's something more significant going on in the airway.
Mm-hmm. Are there different types of snoring, Dr. Dyken? Well, do you listen to snoring? I mean, recorded snoring, I imagine you must be an expert on that.
Arose by any other name. and so kids are different. So it was funny when we started doing more and more children years ago, they said, well, the text would be, I didn't hear any snoring last night. And you hear this, and you go, well, little kids don't have the deep baritone bass vibratory that is described in Dorland's medical dictionary. So you can have a bunch of different sounds when an airway is closing. So snoring is a screech, inspiratory sound, a gasp. It could be arose by any other name.
Okay. We'll be back in just a minute. We'll have more conversation with Dr. Eric Dyken and Dr. Rachel Emmon, our sleep experts this hour. Dr. Dyken is the director of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center, and we'd like to welcome your advice. Perhaps you have a sleep remedy, as we heard just minutes ago, something that's worked for you. Perhaps you have a sleep problem you'd like to get some advice about. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. We'll be back with more on getting better sleep in just a moment. It's River to River.
So tired, I haven't slept a wink. I'm so tired, my mind is on the blink. I wonder, should I get up and fix myself a drink? No, 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 I'm so tired, I don't know what to do. I'm so tired, my mind is set on.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from the IMT Des Moines Marathon, October 19th and 20th. With 6 race events, including the full and half marathons, marathon relay, 5K, and more. Register at DesMoinesMarathon.com.
And we're back with more of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer with an hour all about sleep research, getting better sleep. Dr. Eric Dyken is with us. She's a neurologist and director of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center, along with Dr. Rachel Emmon, psychiatrist and family physician. She's finishing up a sleep fellowship at the University of Iowa and focuses on insomnia, also cognitive behavioral therapy for insomnia, CBTI. We talked about that in depth in the first half hour. We may touch on it again in the second half hour. We want to reach out to you and ask you, how is your sleep? Share your sleep problem or unusual sleep experience this hour to get a bit of advice, perhaps a little in guidance. We don't diagnose over the air, our Dr. Stone, but we can give you some advice. 1-866-780-9100, river to river at iowapublicradio.org. Let's talk a little bit more about insomnia. So many Americans, especially older adults, suffer from insomnia. I'm reading here, Dr. Emmon, chronic insomnia affecting 5 to 10% of older adults. What are the health consequences linked to chronic insomnia. Of course, if you have difficulty falling asleep or staying asleep, you know you're going to feel crummy the next day. But there are repercussions past just feeling crummy, right?
Absolutely. So a lot of people do feel that frustration of not sleeping through the night, and they may feel worse the next day. I think sometimes the daytime symptoms of insomnia are underappreciated. But beyond that, when you have insomnia for weeks, months, and years, we know that it can help your physical, or it can make your physical well-being worse as well as your mental well-being worse. Specifically, we've looked and recognized that depression is more likely to have a relapse if there's untreated insomnia. Things with the other parts of the body, such as the heart, AFib does not respond to treatments as well if there's ongoing sleep problems. So mentally, physically, insomnia causes a lot of issues.
Mm-hmm. So if you do have a sleep problem, it's not just about feeling crummy. It can have repercussions, long-lasting ones. I'm looking at research, Dr. Dyken. I know you've looked at this too. Increasing severity of sleep-disordered breathing and sleep disruption associated in this new study with epigenetic age acceleration in some preliminary results. Interpret that for us.
Well, what they had seen, they looked at people with obstructive sleep apnea. And obstructive sleep apnea is associated with low oxygen to every part of your body. And we know we need air, oxygen, to keep alive. So the higher the number of times you stop breathing, the apnea hypopnea index, the number of times you stop breathing, the older you looked. So they were about a year or so older biologically than their stated age. And the more you disrupted the sleep, so apnea itself disrupts sleep, causes insomnia because the body will protect itself. You're not breathing, it'll wake up so your airway opens up and you stop snoring, you get the air back into your system. So the more you disrupted the sleep, the arousal index, what they call that, you were even older looking. So you do need, we know that from animal studies, sleep to keep alive. And we know there's a restorative effect.
Okay, let's go back to our phones. 1-866-780-9100. Art is joining us from Des Moines. Welcome to the program, Art. Do you have a sleep problem to share?
Yes, I do have a sleep problem, and it's what I would call sleep procrastination, and that is just procrastinating going to sleep. Always finding something else to do, watching TV and miniseries that could go on till 2-3 o'clock in the morning. It's just the resistance to go to bed. Going to bed, I can fall asleep very quickly, but there's a resistance to go to bed. I'm just curious about what their new research is on sleep procrastination.
Okay, I haven't heard that term. Dr. Dyken?
Well, you've got a smartphone and you got a teenage kid. Well, I used to have teenage kids. But, you know, that's one of the big, I would say, parallels. What's more exciting than discussing the day's excitements with your girlfriend in St. Louis when you're here in Iowa City? And that's sleep procrastination. So a lot of things that people do, especially with the young adolescents that could be all night on the internet, if you will, is you have a plan for calming down. So we have an agreement. We don't steal the internet or the cell phone, but we say we turn it off an hour before desired bedtime. And then we wash our hands and brush our teeth. And we have a calming down element where we then settle into the environment instead of this excitation of the girlfriend in St. Louis or the stock market in Shanghai. What do you think?
So I think sleep procrastination is a really interesting concept, and I do see it a lot. Sometimes I see it because people are avoiding sleep. There's some sleep avoidance because there's some negative aspect of their sleep, whether it be nightmares or past issues. So trying to understand, is it sleep avoidance or is it enjoyment of that time, that the time procrastinating leading up to sleep is enjoyable because the day has been really stressful? And are there healthy alternatives to either of those? Oftentimes, just a practical thing is I tell people we set an alarm to wake up. We should set an alarm to go to sleep if it's an issue. And you know, if you know you really should be in bed by midnight to get enough sleep, set that alarm for midnight and hit snooze. Don't turn it off until you're actually in bed.
Hmm. Is that any advice that you can use, Art, in Des Moines?
Yes, particularly the last one. I like the alarm thing and about hitting the snooze button until I'm actually in bed. So thank you.
Okay, Art, glad we could help. Art in Des Moines, 1-866-780-9100. Let's go right to another caller, Olivia, also in Des Moines. Hi, Olivia. Welcome to the program.
Hi, thanks.
You've got a problem or an experience to share having to do with sleep?
Yeah, I just had a question, actually. So I don't really have an issue going to sleep or staying asleep or getting enough sleep at night, but I do wake up, and it feels like I'm waking up straight out of a dream, so much so that I'll even have there won't be a real distinction between what is reality and what was my dream. I just wanted to know if there was any, like, what the science was behind that, or if it's like I'm waking up in the middle of my cycle, if there's any way to kind of reset that.
Hmm. Olivia, so it's unpleasant for you when you wake up and you're having trouble distinguishing for a few seconds,
yeah.
I would assume, reality from your dreaming.
Yeah, or I just wake up and I don't feel like I was really resting because I felt like I was in a dream.
Hmm. Olivia in Des Moines, interesting. What do our doctors have to say about that? Any questions to ask Olivia, or what, where would you start with Olivia coming to you with this observation?
So I think this is a really interesting experience, and Olivia states something a lot of people have, that it's unpleasant, which is the primary reason that we need to look at it more. So I would wonder if this may represent a issue with sleep, such as if there's an untreated sleep problem and the sleep stages aren't progressing normally, or there's a lot of sleep deprivation that leads to heavier dreaming. This blend of reality and dreaming may not be the sign of a problem. It may just be a fact of sleep. We know that sleep goes in usually about 90-minute cycles, with dream sleep being the last segment of that. So it's pretty typical to wake up right after or right out of dream sleep. It tends to be a lighter, active stage. So after an evaluation to see if it's a sign of a sleep problem, potentially would be, and if it's not a problem, would just be working on the dream content itself, reassurance that it's a normal phenomenon, and maybe doing some directed dreaming or imagery to help reduce with the stress of that.
Mm-hmm. You know, Rosalind Cartwright in Chicago did dream analysis as a therapy, and she really worked with women who were going through divorces. And the dreams were often semi-focused, semi-real. And as she worked on the counseling over many, many weeks and months, the dreams became more formed, more pointed, a little bit Freudian still, you know, just that strange parallel element. But they were uncomfortable dreams, not necessarily nightmare, as you imply. But then again, sleep apnea is worse in REM sleep, and we always worry about pseudo-nightmare, which may be that you're not breathing, but often then the dream parallels drowning, which is how I got diagnosed with the. So there can be a series of uncomfortable dreams that are not just nightmare.
Mm. Okay. Thanks very much. Let's go to Bob in Des Moines. Bob, welcome to the program. Coming up to the end of the hour, but we're sure glad you're with us. What's your problem?
I suffer from an extreme case of restless leg syndrome. And I just wonder what your thoughts were on that, or got some insight, or in how to treat it.
Well, this is interesting, Bob, that you should call by chance. Last week, I think Dr. Immon gave a talk, a presentation of new research on restless leg syndrome at the American Academy of Sleep. Did I get that right, Dr. Immon?
Yes, yep, that's right. I was just in San Antonio last week reviewing this problem. It's a very, very difficult problem. My heart goes out to people with restless leg syndrome. It is a maddening issue. It can be devastating to your sleep and physical health and mental health. And it is a difficult nut to crack.
Let me go back to Bob, because those who have not experienced it or don't have someone who... Bob, are you still there? Bob, are you still... Yeah, can you describe what your restless leg syndrome is like?
Well, I'm kind of caught between being awake and asleep. It's sleep deprivation. And, you know, I went 10 years kind of undiagnosed, and it caused some problems, you know, mental and physical, I believe.
What is the sensation, Bob, when you're sleeping and have restless leg syndrome? Is it you can't keep your legs still?
Correct. I can get up, walk around, take a hot shower or bath, or just movement helps, but you're still stuck. You're still stuck in that realm between awake and asleep.
Okay, Bob. Okay, Dr. Immon, what do you have to tell to Bob and others who suffer from restless leg syndrome? What do we know about it?
We know some, not enough. We really would love to know a lot more. Oftentimes what we recommend is doing a really thorough evaluation and looking for anything that could be negatively impacting the restless leg. People with restless leg syndrome, for unclear reasons, often have lower than usual iron levels, and we know just improving the natural supplement of iron can often improve restless legs. Oftentimes people are on medication for other reasons that make restless legs worse, so taking a good look at that medicine list. And sometimes people, in an attempt to treat their restless leg, get put on a medication that ultimately makes their restless legs worse. And it's a really difficult spot. It's between a rock and a hard place. So we look at negative players first, and then we try to find something that decreases that urge, that uncomfortable urge to move the legs.
And Bob, you've spoken with your physician about this, and have you seen a sleep specialist?
Yes, and that's exactly what happened to me. I was on medication that made it worse, and I found one that worked for me. But it's got some side effects, so
okay.
I'm really struggling.
Bob, we hope you find a solution to your restless leg syndrome. Yeah. Thank you for calling up and sharing.
Thank you.
Let's go right to Carrie in Davenport. If you've just joined us, we're catching up on our sleep news, our research, and answering your questions about how to get better sleep. Dr. Rachel Immon and Dr. Eric Dykin with us of the University of Iowa. Carrie is with us in Davenport. Hi, Carrie.
Hi.
Welcome to the program.
Thank you. First time caller.
Very good.
I'm calling because I struggle with chronic insomnia, and it's quite vexing. And it's led to sleep procrastination over the years. I have a problem falling asleep, staying asleep. Lately, I've been waking up at 3:41 a.m., and I can't get back to sleep, and I know I've only been asleep a few hours. And so I've tried journaling, you know, before bed to, like, is it something I need to release? Or I try meditation, counting breaths. I read, and I'm just really beside myself. I don't know what to do.
Right. It's so
I'm
draining.
All out of solution.
So draining and so exasperating, Carrie. We understand where you're coming from. What can we tell Carrie there, Dr. Dykin?
Does it interfere with your daytime performance? Do you fall asleep driving a car, dangerous situations, things like that?
No, I'm pretty much brain fogged. I'd say that's the key thing. And I do get tired later on in the afternoon, but I do resist napping because I don't think that will benefit me.
Yeah, sleep restriction. So tell me, is this a lifelong problem or is this a new problem?
This problem's been going on for about 40 years, but it's gotten worse. In the past three months, or maybe closer to a year, because when I have been able to fall asleep, I also have hideous nightmares where I just wake up screaming. And the dreams are very elaborate and complicated, and I remember them. And so, you know, it's kind of this approach avoidance for me in bedtime. It's like, I would love to sleep, but I am just not sure that it's going to happen.
Have you had a sleep study?
I did have a sleep study some time ago, and they said that I was fine. That has been several decades ago, so I've not had one lately. I think the thing that's beginning to concern me is it's happened now a couple of times where I've been asleep and I have not been able to breathe. And so I tell myself, you know, I'm sleeping, and so it's okay.
And that's what I alluded to before. We call it activation synthesis hypothesis. Pretty long word, and that's by my good buddy, Dr. Hobson from Harvard, who has done dream analysis. And many years ago, before I was diagnosed with sleep apnea, I dreamed I was drowning. I couldn't breathe. And underwater, I wrote million-dollar policies for my children because I knew I was going to die. I finally woke up gasping, and my doctor did a sleep study in my own lab. I had sleep apnea, and that's not very good for glaucoma, by the way, either, or your brain, or everything else we've talked about. I would recommend you go talk to your healthcare professional. I would recommend that they consider having you lay flat on your back, if possible, and do another sleep study first, rule out the sleep apnea. Then look at a lot of different things we could call conditioned insomnia, which I'm sure you've had because of all these years, and see a good insomnia expert, maybe even Dr. Immon, because I think you probably have more than one thing going on because of the chronicity. But please rule out low oxygen. We all need air. And now that you're having dreams like me, shorter breath or that kind of sensation and horrific dreams, I think that must be ruled out.
Okay, Carrie. We hope you get looked after your chronic insomnia. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
Yeah, good luck.
All right.
Let's go to Monica, our last caller, I think, for this hour. Monica in Humboldt. Hi, Monica. I'll ask you to be brief, but we're sure glad you're on.
Hi. This is Monica, and I just wanted to say I don't know if it's a sleep disorder, but I think it probably is. I only sleep about 2 to 3 hours a night, and not a night, at a stretch. I've never slept for more than 4 or 5 hours. And I think one of my problems is I wake up after 2 or 3 hours and I eat. Like, I will eat a cookie or cupcake. Most of the time it's something sweet, but there have been many other times when I've actually, like a sandwich. Or something like that.
You wake up hungry, you just have a craving for some kind of food.
It's something sweet, usually, yes. And I think that's what disturbs my my sleep, is because I'm getting into this habit of eating every night. And when I was about 3 years old, I would sneak down to the freezer and get it into the ice cream.
Oh, maybe we're getting to the roots of it there. Monica, I'm going to have to cut you off because I want an answer from, I think Dr. Immon has a few words for you. Okay. What would you say to a story like that, Dr. Immon?
So I would love to talk more about it. It's a very interesting issue going on. Monica said a key word, which is habit, and it sounds like this dates back to childhood. So one, you know, you would wonder if there's a sleep condition going on, but if it's purely habit that, you know, as a child she knew that's a good opportunity to go down and get ice cream, and then that stuck with her into adulthood, it's maybe a good time to restructure those childhood skills into adult lifestyle.
The Dagwood effect.
Yeah.
Monica, now, have you ever tried to break this habit of just saying, okay, I'm going to wake up, but I'm not going to get something to eat? Have you ever tried that?
I have, and I actually, you know, this may sound weird, but when I have had, you know, a couple beers at night before I've gone to bed, I'm less likely to eat. But I don't want to get into that habit either. Definitely not.
You know, if it ain't broke, why fix it? You know, so far you haven't said that you don't not like this. You're not falling asleep.
I'm not. But yeah. I think that lately I've just, the older I get, the more weight I put on, so I'm wondering if midnight snacking.
And it does. And that is a real problem. Yeah. And that is a real problem. And waking up at night can lead to that. It's well published. And I think you're being very wise with it now. As we do get older, the waking up at night, the eating at night, it can lead to significant weight gain. And I think, as Dr. Immon said, if you could see your healthcare professional and talk to them about breaking this habit without all the beers right before going to sleep, as you've implied. But, you know, and again, okay. Do well.
Monica, thank you for sharing, yeah. And we hope you find a solution there. From Monica from Humboldt, thank you. Okay, thank you to all the callers and emailers this hour for Dr. Rachel Immon and Dr. Eric Dykin of the University of Iowa Sleep Disorders Center. Thank you both for coming into our studio today. A real array of interesting cases out there. We hope it leads to better sleep, some of the advice that you've given. We appreciate you both coming in, doctors.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, it was great being here.
River to River is produced by Rick Brewer, Caitlin and Caitlin Harrop. Our executive producer is Catherine Perkins. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.